End zone. Goddell again. His third of the night. This guy is a touchdown machine for the Houston Cougars.
Sasser again, just kind of taking over right now.
That's NBA stuff right there. He is a baller.
Stick it in your pipe and smoke it, baby. Yes!
Welcome to the Scott Holman Podcast. After that tough Cougar Hoops loss this past weekend, I thought we'd start tonight with kind of a guided meditation. We're going to, all together tonight, all of you listeners, we're going to, you and me together, we're going to focus on our breathing, we're going to focus on our mindfulness. I want you guys, every one of you at home, think about your breaths. Breathe in, breathe out. Don't think about how many points Temple's basketball team scored in the final 6 minutes and 5 seconds of Sunday's game. Don't think about it. Just think instead about a beautiful babbling brook on an early spring day. The trees are swaying with a gentle but still friendly breeze. Breathe in. Breathe out. Take those feelings you might have about the dubious technical foul Kelvin Sampson received, and using just the power of your mind, I want you to manifest those angry thoughts into a little sparrow perched on a nearby tree. I want you to take a moment, envision that sparrow flying far, far away, and just like that, your anger's gone. I want you to breathe in, breathe out. Just let the thoughts about Sunday's loss melt away. Replace those thoughts with thinking about a convincing road win from Wednesday night over the UCF Knights, and there we go. Look at that, everybody. We have cleansed our thoughts together. We are calm, we are focused, we are ready for the regular business of talking all things Houston Cougars from the past week that was, and talking about a week to come too, talking of course a certain men's hoops loss, but also I think an even more recent and certainly very encouraging road win that just happened a little bit ago tonight in Orlando. But plenty to talk about also outside of men's hoops, the many and numerous other in-season Houston Cougar sports, and some football recruiting, some roster and coaching movement from that team as well. Plenty to talk about that tonight. It's going to be just me because, frankly, Dustin and I's windows of being able to do this podcast were pretty tight this week. I think Dustin's only available day was tomorrow, where I will be seeing a musical with my significant other. I know I'm just as surprised as you are. I'm apparently becoming a man of culture at my age. So we both agreed that best to have an episode out this week with a lot of stuff to talk about here. So I'm going to be your guide on this journey, and hopefully the thought of me talking for the next hour or so about all things Houston Cougars doesn't make you want to immediately pause your podcasting device and just decide to do literally anything else. I really hope I get to talk some Cougars with you as you listen, whenever you're listening, wherever you're listening from, whoever you are. We're really very happy to have you tune into our show and talking all things Cougars here. Gonna mention at the top, as I always do, our fantastic network partners, the 1012 Network, talking all things Big 12 Conference over there, as well as many school-specific and even sports-specific podcasts. Please subscribe to the 1012 Podcast. Like I know a number of y'all already have. Really appreciate those of you who have, and if you haven't already, give them a subscribe wherever you put podcasts in your ears. Follow them on Twitter, at TEN12 Network. We'd really, really appreciate it if you did. And I'm going to mention also our premium podcast. We just did one this week with the Daily Cougars' James Mueller, the Wunderkind, I think. One of the very best on this beat already as a still undergrad at the University of Houston. I was very excited to finally have a one-on-one with him, and I did a little bit of diving into the weeds, maybe more so than I'm able to do on this show, about the Cougar football coaching movement, what's potentially behind that, and the larger context for these kind of late off-season moves that have happened. And this program happened, I think, with a surprising amount of success. So I got to kind of riff on that more and look at it more in-depth than I maybe would have the time to. And a week's episode like this one, where we have a lot of stuff to talk about and don't want to shortchange anybody who has things to talk about in the Cougar sports world. So for less than 20 cents a day, $5 a month, you'd be supporting our show. You'd be getting premium episodes on a weekly basis. We have been doing this for about 7 weeks since the beginning of December and have put out 7 premium episodes, even with the Christmas holiday and New Year's. I'm not just patting myself on the back. I want you to know out there, if you're on the fence, that we are very serious about providing you a regular product for your contribution to us. So for less than 20 cents, you'd be supporting our show, you'd be getting premium content, and I think really helping us dive more into this podcast and covering, I think, a really exciting time for Houston Cougar Athletics. And of course, this also wouldn't be the beginning of an episode if I didn't also mention our good friends at the good brand Homefield Apparel at homefieldapparel.com. Not just our good friends, but makers of incredibly comfortable and unique, officially licensed collegiate apparel. Lots of really great vintage designs, all the Houston Cougar designs you could want, including not one, but multiple old-timey Sailor Cougars on some great designed t-shirts. And even though I know many of y'all have already done this, and for that we are very appreciative, but I know some of y'all out there haven't. If you want it to look good, and if you want to have some incredibly comfortable, unique Houston Cougar wearables, you can go to homefieldapparel.com and use our promo code HOLMAN12, like Scott and Holman, HOLMAN12. You will use that promo code at checkout and save 15% off your first order. Be glad, not just that you're making some incredible additions to your wardrobe, but that you made those additions and saved a little coin doing it. And if you're pretty well stocked on Cougar gear, you have secondary collegiate rooting interest, or you're like me and you're wearing a UC Irvine Surf and Anteater men's basketball shirt, you just like vintage college shirts of at least certain non-University Houston teams, Homefield, as I always say, has an unbeatable selection, hundreds of different schools, multiple recent collection additions and refreshes. And I think what I think is most important, I think what's most cool, why we're really excited to be partners with Homefield, is that they have a consistent care in providing a quality product for schools that aren't necessarily your household names, that there's the care and effort put into Slippery Rock or UC Irvine or Miami of Ohio or Ball State having really cool, unique gear as there is for your Oklahomas and Floridas, that the collections for Blue Bloods are fantastic, but really like top to bottom, that they give the schools that maybe don't get the same level of attention from your bigger names in the apparel space. And yeah, big reason we're really excited to continuously partner with Homefield. So shop homefieldapparel.com, get yourself some awesome Cougar gear, use that promo code HOLMAN12 and support our little podcast in the process. But I will filibuster no more. I will do no more admin. We will talk Cougar men's basketball, the subject I think on all of our minds. And it's a rarity where Dustin and I come on here and we have to rip the proverbial band-aid off a Cougar story, and the specific subject of that Cougar story is men's basketball. That has just been quite the rarity. I think it has been almost 24 months. I would say probably that ECU loss during the 2020-2021 season, where we've had to talk about a kind of inexplicable loss to a not very good team, to a team that the Cougars were a pretty sizable favorite over, and that was the case on Sundays. The Cougs took a surprising, very narrow, and certainly very, very frustrating 56-55 loss to the Temple Owls on Sunday at the Fertitta Center. And you know, all losses are, by their very nature, somewhat aggravating, especially when, as a fan of this program, you're not experiencing losing too frequently. I mean, if you want to exclude NCAA tournament losses to end the season, Cougar fans have only experienced 18 regular season losses since the start of the 2019-2020 season. And nearly half of those 18 losses occurred just in the 2019-2020 season. That means in the last 2.5-ish years, UH has 10 regular season losses. That's crazy. 10 regular season losses is a good year for some programs. And I don't bring this up to say, well, this program's been awesome and you can't be critical about this specific game or find through lines to maybe some previous shaky home performances and the performance from Sunday's loss. I think I just want the context of everything that I say that's critical about this team and about this game to obviously note that it's part of the larger context of this being a very, very good basketball team in the present. But I don't have to tell you listening, this game from this past Sunday was a pretty tough watch. On the biggest picture level, you're not going to look at a 56-55 loss, a 56-55 loss where you had good chances at the end to get a basket and win this game. You're not going to look at that 56-55 loss and say, well, okay, like the team in the losing end played poor defense, and that defense gave you a clear chance to win. Temple not hitting a single shot in the final 6 minutes and change of regulation, and that was your window opportunity there that this team gave itself after going down 55-48 to take the game back and win. The same way, if you go back a couple games, the Cougars were able to avoid a loss against USF after USF took, I think, their biggest second half lead and at times looked unstoppable. You saw the Cougars have a near 10-minute window of mostly holding USF from putting the ball in the basket, and you saw something similar here. But I think, unfortunately, unlike that USF game, you didn't have anyone step up like Marcus Sasser did, including Marcus Sasser, to bail out the team's frustrating day offensively. And I will say, though, even if the overall outcome of holding Temple to 56 points and certainly admitting that the defense gave your team a chance to win down the stretch, that's all laudable, and I think it should have been enough for this team to see a win over the line. But I would still say, I'm sure in the postmortem, Kelvin Sampson and his staff found a lot to quibble with defensively, certainly in the first 10 minutes of each half. And yes, in each of those halves, you did recover well enough to close out and give yourselves a chance to make up for those bad starts by playing some stingy defense eventually. But part, I think, of some of the less than stellar efforts we've seen at home in the current season have been slow starts at both offensively and defensively. And I think those inconsistencies have shown themselves most frequently this year on offense, where I think you could say at times this team certainly has top 10 best offense in the country ceiling, but this has also been a team that's been very feast or famine. When it's feast, it's really feasting. But when it's famine, sometimes it feels like nothing's going right. I think still on the aggregate, I think every metric, standard or otherwise, would tell you this is a very, very good offensive team. But there have been some moments where they haven't played for really extended periods of time like the offense that I think we all know that they're capable of. Because I also have no doubt that someone who understands team defense like Kelvin Sampson is at worst, I think, one of the very best X's and O's guys in the college game. I'm sure, though, he could look back at that Temple game and also see a fair number of specific defensive failings. Temple, you could just see from watching it, you don't have to be an expert to see Temple getting the kind of open looks from deep and open looks in the lane that maybe we're not used to seeing this team give up on a regular basis. So I guess it doesn't stand out in the same way it did against USF, because the Bulls easily reached the highest point total the Cougars have given up this year. And I think before I dive into the offensive failings, we can point out that a not small part of Temple doing well enough in this game to get a sizable second half lead was, I think, at times a result of some atypical defensive lapses from this Cougar team. And I also want to circle back to something that I think helped this Cougar team out in two previous close shaves at home with conference opponents. I think it was doing things on the margins that were better than your opponents. The making free throws, the second chance points, offensive boards, forcing turnovers, avoiding them yourself, the turnovers, all those kind of things. And the Cougars didn't necessarily fail in all those areas I just mentioned. I mean, you had seven turnovers the course of the game. I don't think there's anything really to complain about there, especially when Temple nearly had double that number and you were plus eight on points off turnovers like the Cougs were on Sunday. Not a failing area there. Edge on offensive boards as well. The Cougars doubled up the number of offensive rebounds Temple had a plus 10 edge in second chance, points as well. But I've listed off all these categories, and if you watch the game on Sunday, I think you know where I'm going with this. An inability to hit free throws when your opponent, conversely, almost couldn't miss, I think really bit you in this one. You know, shooting about 20% below your season average from the line when you've already given yourself a really tight margin of error here by not shooting the ball well, not functioning offensively the best you can, I think that's just a disaster waiting to happen. And as much as there were frustrating points of this game where you felt like the Cougs weren't getting a break, a call was going this way, that way, etc., you can't miss 10 free throws and then bemoan something external about why you lost a one-point game. That was your chance right there. That was your chance to take a tight one at home where maybe you didn't play your best offensive game. And just to go back to those two narrow wins, you had the first UCF game where the Cougs shot 81% from the line. And I think most importantly, a subset of that, your three big men combined to go 7 of 8. USF wasn't as strong of a performance from the free throw line, but the Cougs shot 68%. And in a game as tight as last Sunday's was, I think even shooting around 68% might have been enough to see out a Cougar win. And I think maybe the most painful thing is something I've already mentioned, is the fact that Temple just could not miss from the line all day. And they had their best free throw shooter at the line with just over a minute left, Damian Dunn, who I think gave the Cougs as much problems as anyone on that Temple team getting to the line and being really effective in that way, being able to attack the Cougars in a way where they weren't able to, I guess, defend him without fouling. Whatever you think of the officiating, he clearly, and this Temple team on the aggregate clearly are good at doing the things that convince collegiate referees to give you free throws, and that's kind of the name of the game. But you were able to actually get Damian Dunn to the free throw line, and he only made 1 of 2. And that that put you in a position where any made basket could have won this game. You had over a minute just to make one basket. The Cougs even got a shot clock violation and avoided sending Dunn to the line. It ended up being Temple's last possession. I think it felt like in real time, I didn't want to get my hopes up after this very, very frustrating game, but it seemed like the stars were aligning for the Cougars to escape this one with a win. I think you even executed that Tremont Mark tip-in play with a second left on the clock going into the inbound. I think you executed that as well as you could to get an open look at the buzzer. I thought the look that got blocked previously was not a bad look. It just did not happen. And, you know, I left this one feeling good about a Kelvin Sampson team coming off a loss. I think it was vindicated by the UCF game that we just finished watching tonight, Wednesday, obviously, if you're listening after tonight. And I think it felt like kind of a Murphy's Law game offensively in some aspects. I realized you weren't getting some of the best shots, and I think if I were to come on here and say, well, this was solely U of H missing looks they should have made and that Temple didn't do anything to affect it, I don't think that's accurate. I think in any basketball game, you can't just make it a referendum on the winning team or losing team. And I don't think I'd be honestly assessing this game if I didn't say that Temple's length, I think at times, really bothered the Cougars. Both the Cougars' ability to defend without fouling, like I talked about earlier, and getting, you know, the ability of Temple to actually convert those free throws when they did the things necessary to get to the line. But it did feel like the Cougars were atypically bad when they had decent looks from the field. They're, for an offensive effort that was as bad as this one was, and then this isn't the case about all this team's bad offensive efforts this year, but it really, there weren't as many times as you would think watching it, and even in parts rewatching it, where I would say, no, it's a bad shot, don't take that. It's kind of like, well, it's kind of the look I want Tremont Mark take, or Jamal Shedd to take, or Marcus Sasser, and they just, whatever happened, were not falling. And that's just basketball sometimes. And I think this team is good enough and at times has been fortunate enough to be able to overcome the really horrid offensive games that even the best teams have. And that's not me saying any of this that, oh, well, you're just going to lose to a team like Temple and that I think this team had any business losing home to Temple. No, I think this team needed to get a wake-up call from this game. I think this needed to be the kind of game that really prompted kind of a metaphorical look in the mirror, because while it's a veteran team, while it's a team that's shown itself capable of wild swings, I mean, this is now a Temple team that has a bunch of outside the KenPom top 200 losses, but also a win over number one Houston, number 20 or 21 as of last check, Rutgers. A team capable of playing up to the moment, certainly, but I don't take back anything I said that may have sounded dismissive about Temple in the preview. I don't feel very differently about Temple now than I did when I talked about the game in the last week. And that's not a knock on Temple. If anything, I think it should really, it shouldn't be anything to Temple fans, but a really exciting win and maybe a hope that Aaron McKee has something here that you know, unlocks the era of his boss. Even if Temple basketball circa 1980 or 1990 something, or John Chaney, is no longer possible, that maybe this is where it turns around and this team finds a way to be the best team Mickey's had and be top three or four in the American. They do have some incredible close game mojo this year. They've won a bunch of really close ones, and sometimes that's unsustainable, but sometimes it just snowballs, winning on top of winning, and guys get confidence and you start really seeing the fact that a lot of these guys have been in the program for 2 or 3 years, and that there's a lot of, I think, veteran talent now on this team. They have lost some key guys to the portal, but that he's been able to keep a lot of this core around and maybe, you know, getting a bit better health than he got at times last season. Maybe this is what clicks for Temple, but I don't think I saw a dramatically different team than I expected. They had some length. They're pretty good getting the free throw line and played up to a game against a big opponent like they had previously this year. I think the Cougars should have been able to do a bit more, even on a bad offensive game, to win this. And the free throw shooting, very frustrating. I mean, and there were some very frustrating calls on this one. I'm not a super big fan of officiating, but I don't think you could look in any way and say that it was a net positive or a net negative for either team. Yeah, the Kelvin Sampson technical, didn't like it, didn't think it was warranted, but ultimately You basically were even with Temple on free throws. You were certainly not even on makes. That's just one little stat, but I think it kind of tells you the full story of the win was very much in your grasp. You can't blame externalities. This should have been a game the Cougars won. But I think not surprisingly, we got a response from this team. As he always says, Kelvin Sampson never likes to waste a loss. And I thought the Cougars came back Wednesday night tonight as I record this to Addition Arena in Orlando to take on the UCF Knights for, I think, a pretty well-awaited rematch. This was a, I think, to Cougar fans, closer than expected game back on New Year's Eve 2022 to open up conference play. And I'm not going to say there weren't points in this one where UCF made it interesting, and I do think this is one where the 82-71 final maybe doesn't tell the story of how close it was at times. But also, this was a game, I would say, after UCF had that early strong run that you generally see teams do against this Cougar team. You saw the Cougars go back out there right before the first media timeout after UCF grabbed that really early 8-2 lead and really take the game by the scruff of the neck. That's not that UCF didn't have opportunities. They, I think, tied it at points in the first half. They cut it to a basket at a couple different points in both the first and second half. But if you had told me after as stressful of a home win as the Cougars got back about 4 weeks ago at this point over the Knights that the return game in Orlando would be a double-digit Cougar win where the Cougars didn't trail after about the first media timeout and really felt like they were in control even when the Knights cut it to one or two baskets, I would have shook your hand and took it all day and said, thank you for making me a lot less stressed about our future schedule. And what was really exciting to me about this one is that, not that Marcus Sasser performances aren't just fantastic, that it's not a real treasure to watch Marcus Sasser go supernova or Jairus Walker really take over a game with the kind of athleticism we haven't seen come through this program. But, and by the way, we did get some of that with Jairus Walker. This was not a quiet game for Mr. Walker. He was quite impactful for your Cougars. But I thought it was really exciting about tonight. There was one point, and I didn't actually catch this until I rewatched a decent chunk of the second half, because in real time I was trying to cook dinner and watch the basketball game. And while I feel like I'm decently attentive there, sometimes you need a second watch to really catch certain things. And I'm glad I caught this, because I had sort of forgotten when the Cougars really pushed back the last UCF, I think, gasp of getting back in this game around, I think, the 6-7 minute mark left in the second half. It wasn't because Marcus Sasser come back on the floor. Sampson took him off the floor because Sasser had four fouls. Tremont Mark spent a decent amount of this game in foul trouble as well. Wasn't super effective offensively himself. So that lineup you had down the stretch was all three of your freshmen on the floor. Jairus Walker, who was obviously doing quite good. Emmanuel Sharp, who we'll talk about more in a second, had an absolutely fantastic game. And Terrence Arsenault, who I think his 12 minutes and 2 points, I think, belies his real critical contributions at a point in the game where the Cougars needed to pull away and were able to, I think, put UCF on ice with some minutes left in the game. And that's so exciting that you were able to finish off a top three or four opponent in your league with three freshmen on the court. Your best guards, two of your three best guards, certainly sitting on the bench with foul trouble. And your point guard, who I think before the prior two games was in kind of an offensive funk, really show Jamal Shedd did how good he could be. It's incredible that I'm talking about what a good night Jamal Shedd had offensively. He was 2 of 5 from the free throw, but he impacted this game in so many ways. A double-double, 14 points and 10 assists. Hit some big threes. I think you've kind of seen his confidence wane at times from three-point range, and I thought just did a really fantastic job stabilizing this team in a hostile road setting and helping see this win over the line. Jairus Walker, obviously, can't say enough about him, but I'm not going to have Jairus Walker be the leading freshman, because what can you say about Emmanuel Sharp? Not just the big shots he hit, but the obvious moxie this kid has. I think that was one of those things when Sharp got on the floor against Northern Colorado in the season opener. You're trying, as a Cougar fan, not to take too much away from your very opening game of the season against an opponent that I think everyone knew was some degree of fairly inferior opponent to yourself. But that's what really stuck out to me when you saw Emmanuel Sharp's first collegiate Division I in a live game reps. was how confident he looked. That I'm not taking really what he did from Northern Colorado away, but this kid wasn't afraid to shoot. He didn't look tentative. And that's just something even the best freshman, you've seen Jairus Walker, who I think is a genuine, bona fide, somewhere in the lottery pick and the best athlete and one of the best players we've seen from this program in recent memory. You've seen him be attentive at times because the college game is just a different animal. And Manuel Sharp just has that shooter's mentality. He's not afraid to, this is kind of a weird way to say it, he's not afraid to airball a shot. If he thinks he's got an open look, even as a freshman who I think he's done a good job knowing his role out there, he's got the shooter mentality. And a shooter mentality that I don't know you can entirely teach. And it was just really impressive to see him, a guy that I'm not sure we would have really had a strong expectation of playing critical minutes in one of the tougher conference road games in this big environment. He had just big shot after big shot. The moment is never too big for him. And I think sometimes this past offseason, we kind of forgot about him and what he could be for this team this year. And I think it continues to be a really awesome and pleasant surprise that he looks as comfortable with the college game as he does. Maybe an endorsement of that semester he spent last year rehabbing and just being a part of the Cougar basketball program, that having that extra semester of college when you're an 18, 19 year old, I think really can make that kind of difference. But 4 of 6 from 3-point range was really, really impactful. And I felt like all four of those 3-pointers came at a big moment, but won't bury the performance of Jairus Walker any further. I thought we got a really nice preview of two guys who I think are going to be picked well inside the first round. Jairus Walker, obviously, from the Cougars, but Taylor Hendricks from UCF, I thought, also very impressive. Both times I've seen him this year, even though he did struggle to shoot a bit at times against the Cougars at the Fertitta Center, I think the fact that the Cougars held him to his not most efficient offensive game is how you kind of saw out that previous narrow win. But you didn't get that tonight. I thought Taylor Hendricks was as good as anyone on that UCF team tonight. 7 of 10 from the field, 7 boards, 4 blocks, and a steal. Did get a certainly to the home crowd, kind of controversial 4th foul early. I thought, whatever you think about the foul, I think kind of malpractice by Johnny Dawkins to leave him out there to get his 4th that early in the second half. But I thought it was good he was able to come back out there, and that no one can say that Taylor Hendricks didn't get a chance to impact the critical point of the second half of this game. He didn't get fouled out. Amazingly, 4 different guys between the teams had 4 fouls, but another story for another time there. But I thought it was a really nice one-on-one between those two guys. I don't think you could leave this any kind of winner. Like, oh yeah, Taylor Hendricks absolutely had the best of Jairus Walker, and vice versa. I thought both guys just really showed themselves to be good basketball players. It's really interesting to see how Jairus Walker, who I think has had a good season. This is not in any way me saying Jairus Walker hasn't been good at home. I don't think you have to go back too far to look at an SMU game where Jairus Walker single-handedly dismantled a Division I conference opponent. But you've seen some of the big road games this year, Virginia, Oregon, I guess, to an extent, and this one against UCF, Jairus Walker really plays great in front of those big opposing crowds and in those big contests. It's really, really cool to see. I've really enjoyed seeing him start to put it together even more in this new calendar year, and hope we have another month and a half of him really showing us what he can do. And that you're able to, I think Marcus Astor had a good game, 14 points, 4 assists in 25 minutes on 4 of 7 shooting. Not going to quibble with that one bit. Marcus was definitely a positive impact player, but I think it just speaks to how good this team is that Marcus Astor can be in foul trouble for a good amount of second half. And it doesn't matter that the team is good enough to overcome that on the road and beat an opponent in a way that you really didn't spend much of the second half sweating about it. I think a really good effort from the Cougars. I think probably the best team rebounding performance. I wanted to look at one team metric that we've seen in a good while. As a reminder, and this is a UCF team, I know they're missing Michael Durr, who I think their big man, who was definitely a big part of why the Cougars struggle when these teams played back in Houston. But this is still, even without Michael Durr, a good offensive rebounding team, and that the Cougars did what they did. 3 different starters with 3 offensive boards, and 2 of them being guards, Jamal Shedd and Tremont Mark. Wasn't Tremont Mark's best night, but I thought he still impacted winning for the Cougars when he was on the floor in a positive way, even though just not much he was putting up there is going, and he's kind of in a mini slump himself there. But you saw how good this team can be creating second chances for themselves. That I think on a night where the Cougars are shooting 60% from 2 point range and around 40 from three-point range. Getting 16 second chances is just, I think, an impossible hill to climb for any team, even playing at home, even playing in front of the great crowd that UCF had in Orlando. You're just not going to beat this Cougar team when they're rebounding the basketball as well. And also, I think, making things happen offensively. You certainly saw, I think, the best version of UCF. You didn't just see that great crowd, but you saw a team that was definitely dialed in, a team that really, I think, wanted to salvage a season that's kind of gone sideways since they lost Darius Johnson for a few games there, since they lost Mike Durr over the same period of time. You saw them very hungry to get this win, to reward that home crowd in the same way they did in that just absolute bonkers double overtime win over Memphis not that long ago. And you saw on the other side a Cougar team that was just having none of that. A Cougar team that I think you saw the composure, the maturity, and the undeniable skill that all those guys really bring to the table. So an exciting but not surprising response. You know, Kelvin Sampson teams are going to come out there with a fire in their belly after the kind of frustrating loss that we saw against Temple, but was still very, I think, cleansing to see. It was very good to not have the Temple game and everything that was really frustrating about the Temple game be kind of the last taste in your mouth when it came to Cougar basketball. I was really, really impressed with the resolve, and I think a sign that the issues of the Temple game, you can potentially leave them back in the Temple game. Not saying that the Temple game is going to be the last time the team struggles offensively. Not saying that there will be no other team that potentially beats or challenges the Cougars this season. But if you were expecting a hangover from this Cougar team, I think, one, naive. That's just not this program or Kelvin Sampson. That's just not what this team's going to do. And I think you certainly, if you were skeptical about that, saw it proven on the court pretty clearly in Orlando. And so the Cougars will be back in action on Saturday, back in the friendly confines of the Fertitta Center for a rematch with a conference opponent, your second rematch after Wednesday's rematch with UCF. You're going to be facing the Cincinnati Bearcats, who remain kind of a hard team to pin down. I would say the Bearcats are certainly capable of playing good enough basketball to beat the Cougars. If we, I think, see the kinds of efforts we saw against Temple and USF, this could be a very scary game. And the Bearcats are 3-1 since these two teams met at Fifth Third Arena back on January 8th. None of the three wins since then, though, are really coming against anyone who you would call the creme de la creme of the American. Though, I don't know, USF has been kind of an interesting wild card, and beating them pretty convincingly in Temple is at least somewhat noteworthy. But I would say on the opposite side of that coin, only scoring 54 points in a tight road win over SMU, really doing everything they could to seemingly give that game back to the Ponies, I think is also kind of noteworthy there as well. Most recently, the Bearcats played last Sunday in the early time slot against Memphis at home, and the Tigers did largely lead that game, but the Bearcats kind of made it scary down the stretch in the second half and was probably closer on the balance than maybe the 7-point final margin would lead you to believe. But this also isn't exactly a Memphis team playing its best ball, and I think you're going to really struggle to find many Cincy fans who would be happy about losing to Memphis at home as a 3-point favorite with their expectations for that program. And that's all kind of why I describe this as a hard team to pin down. I feel like each Cincinnati game tells you a different story. And I will say, if you want to compare this team to Temple and how the upset could happen and comparing the Temple Owls and Cincinnati Bearcats, I think the way Temple specifically gave the Cougars problems and what Cincy has shown themselves capable of doing this year don't exactly overlap. That Temple team had shown a fair, consistent ability to get to the free throw line. They combined that with, I think, a fairly whistle-happy crew on both sides, and I think that was kind of one of the biggest parts of the recipe that upset created in Houston. And that's just not something the Cincy team does. They're one of the 20 or so worst teams in the country at getting to the free throw line, and unlike Temple, when they have gotten to the free throw line, they have not been very good at making those freebies. And I think what's encouraging about this rematch is that last time out, Cincy guard Mike Adams Woods had, I would say, probably his best collegiate game. Landers Nolley II came out on fire. Their big man Victor Lockin was really effective in the second half, and that still ended up being a 13-point win that the Cougars controlled largely from start to finish, which I don't want to interpret it as me saying that I have a lot of strong belief after the USF and Temple home games that the Cougars can't come out and allow Cincy to hang around. I would say Cincy is a good bit better than both of those teams. But I also don't think they're a team that can specifically exploit the weaknesses of this Cougar team that Temple was able to last weekend. But again, with some of the recent home performances, I'm certainly not writing off the chance that Cincy might make this one a bit more competitive than perhaps the game back up in the Queen City was. And the Cougar women's basketballers were back in action with a whopping three conference games to talk about for me tonight, starting with, unfortunately, a couple of very frustrating but very close losses to USF and SMU, which I will talk about in that order. And I think this Cougar team really deserves credit for fighting back against the Bulls, the conference's best team by a pretty wide margin, making USF, I would say, sweat a lot more than they have in any other conference game to this point, and making the game far more competitive than any of the three that were played last season. I don't think, gun to my head in previewing this game, that I would have been anything close to optimistic that U of H would have been in a situation where they had the ball, the chance to tie or win the game at the buzzer against this, the league's best team. And that was the case last Wednesday night. Bria Patterson got a layup with 13 seconds left, cut the Bulls' lead that had been doubled to just a few minutes prior to 57-56. USF's Elena Chineke was only able to split the free throws, gave the Cougars only a 56-58 deficit, a chance to win or tie with 7 seconds left, though unfortunately neither Britt Onyeje or Layla Blair could make the final three-point looks they got. The Bulls were able to survive their closest shave on the road to date with that 58-56 final margin. Kind of a weird symmetry that we had the last two basketball games at the Fertitta Center to that point, the loss to Temple following this loss to USF, come down to these down-to-the-wire final possession situations. I will say, like we've said repeatedly about this team, it's obvious this team is playing hard for Ronald Huey and this coaching staff. I wouldn't even think to imply or say that they've checked out in the season. Nothing from the team's on-court play would suggest that, but I will say it is significant context that, yes, this was a two-point final score where he had a chance to win, which is really cool, but you were also down by as much as 14 earlier in the fourth quarter, and for not the first time this season, came out of the half in a game where you were playing a tough opponent close and made your job that much harder by getting outplayed pretty badly in the third quarter. I mean, if you go look at Cougar women's basketball's season stats to date, this team actually has a positive scoring margin for the cumulative stats in every single quarter except the third. And I think you can't point to that and say something definitive like, oh, it's definitely the coaching, or it's definitely the conditioning they do, or anything like that. But I think at this point in the season, you've got to admit that it doesn't look good that you keep losing these tight margin games, and that some of your worst or least effective individual quarter outputs have been coming immediately out of halftime. I think a couple individual things worth highlighting. Not surprisingly, Tiara Young, your most effective and efficient scorer. She had 16 points on 6 of 16 shooting in 25 minutes off the bench. And I want to give some props to the Cougar backcourt on the whole. I think it was a tough game offensively, but I thought they did a really admirable job defensively on a really stout USF guard starting group of Lance Chineke and Sammy Puisi. I held those two to combined 9 of 29 from the field. Definitely would have taken that in the pregame look at this opponent. And USF is definitely challenging. If we were talking about a team that was 12-7 coming off that loss, I think maybe it feels a bit differently. I do think, regardless of context, this was an admirable effort in a lot of ways, but I think it's tough to feel good about coming up short repeatedly when you've put yourself in a clear position to win by playing, you know, better basketball. You had chances to not make it a one-score game. You had chances to actually put yourself in a position to win, and just unfortunately, in this one, you could not. And on the road for the last time against this conference opponent at Moody Coliseum, unfortunately, you could not. Against SMU as well, a 53-50, very close loss to the Mustangs from last Saturday. And the balance, I think, was a bit closer, the back and forth of this one, than the game against USF. This wasn't a three-point margin where the Cougs hurriedly chopped the lead down from 14 or 15 to 3. This was a fairly close one throughout, though I think no less frustrating of a final outcome. The Cougars ultimately, like I said, lost by 3 in a game where you had multiple chances to at least send the game to OT. I thought the Cougar offense really stalled out after a strong first quarter effort. You saw the Cougs holding a lead for the majority of the first quarter and held that lead until halftime, but you also kind of saw in the second quarter the Ponies adjust a bit to what the Cougars did defensively, and you saw the Cougs maybe slip back into some of those offensive doldrums and those bad habits that we've seen this team get into maybe more often than you'd like over the course of the season prior. I think maybe the most frustrating thing is you had that almost identical repeat of the bad third quarter that put a close game against USF out of reach, and this one put a game that you were leading into one that you basically had to spend the entire second half trying to climb uphill and get out of a deficit. And, you know, it's hard not to think to yourself, what if this team comes out of halftime and just plays SMU roughly even instead of nearly getting outscored by a double-digit margin in the third quarter for the second game in a row? You're just not going to win very many basketball games when you struggle for long stretches to score like this Cougar team did in this one and like this Cougar team has done, I think, a decent amount over the course of the season. I guess put it this way. I don't think Layla Blair or Britt Onyeje, you know, forgot how to play basketball. They were combined 2 of 20 in this one. And at some point, I think you have to watch these games and dig into how you got from point A to point B and ask yourself why these two good veteran guards who have both been at or at least not that far from all-conference level in their Cougar careers are struggling at times to score this year. Another really great individual effort from Tiara Young. She had game-high 24 points, 8 of 14 shooting, I think, really importantly, 8 of 10 from the line. But unfortunately, that really great effort's going to get wasted because you just couldn't figure out a way to get anyone else in any kind of scoring rhythm on your roster. And this isn't a bad SMU team, but I think this is a game you should have been winning. This is a game you should have certainly been expecting to win. And I think I'd be doing these young women and this staff a disservice if I didn't think they could beat this iteration of SMU basketball. And maybe that's why, for me, this is the most frustrating loss in the season to date. But did get to end it on a high note. I have not been able to watch this game. I always pride myself in making an effort to catch every game live, or at least in repeat, and with this game directly conflicting with the Cougar game at UCF and just not having very much time between the end of that game and recording this, I've not been able to watch this one. So I feel like that's an important disclaimer, because I try not to come on here and talk about things that I've not personally gotten a chance to witness, though I will be, for my own posterity's sake, watching the repeat of this one on the ESPN app tonight, probably before I go to sleep, to get the taste of a really nice Cougar win. You unfortunately, I will put the one remote negative here at the top. You got outscored by 5 in the third quarter, but on the aggregate, you outscored Cincy by 29 over the other three quarters, held them to single-digit points in the first, second, and fourth quarters, and you did it, I think, refreshingly with some of the contributions from your stars, from players that you know are good impact kind of players. As much as we love what Tiara Young does, and she wasn't a net negative here. She had 8 points and 2 steals and 3 rebounds off the bench tonight. But it was cool to see Layla Blair look like the Layla Blair of old. The Layla Blair who could score at all levels, is good at the free throw line, is going to just give you contributions in a lot of different ways. 11 team steals, that smothering defense that this team has gotten us used to seeing at times. But I thought really cool, Tatiana Hill putting up an incredible in only 23 minutes on the court, 10 points and 14 boards. The Cougars, again, against an opponent in Cincinnati who is the cellar dweller of this conference, is a game on the road for all this team's road struggles that you should have won, but I thought still a really impressive effort that, coming off two really frustrating close losses, and given this team's history with Cincy has not had the best team the last few years, but Cincy has given the Cougars some really frustrating, in the case of the one they suffered at the end of the 2020-2021 season, resume damaging to a really bad degree level of loss, and that the Cougars went out there, didn't let two really close frustrating losses immediately preceding this affect them, and really took care of business and didn't play around with their food very much, didn't beat Cincy with very much drama. I would have been very excited about that. I'm glad and certainly hopeful the team can, I think, build some momentum here. Also got a shout out Bria Patterson, 13 points on 6 of 12 shooting for her. Britt Onyeje getting 10 points as well. Really nice Cougar effort. 5 different scorers with at least 8 points. A balanced effort, an effective offensive effort that maybe we haven't seen as much of in the season. Obviously, didn't have the best third quarter. I did my complaints about that at the top, but even that third quarter, you were able to at least keep this game from getting anything really close to interesting by going 7 of 8 from the free throw line. That hasn't always been this team's strong suit. In a game against an opponent that you should be expecting to win by a bunch, the Cougars did the things well in the margins, I think, too. That's why this wasn't a close and expected win, because the Cougars didn't just shoot the ball well, but they did the things they needed to do on the margins as well. So excited about that. Excited about the coming week's games for your Cougars. You're going to be getting your rematch at home with the Tulane Green Wave at the Fertitta Center, the second of a full weekend slate of home Cougar basketball coming this Saturday and Sunday. A rematch of a close win the Cougars were able to get in the early part of January in New Orleans over the Green Wave. A game where the Cougars, if you'll recall, took control of the game in the second, avoided their third quarter troubles by playing the Green Wave roughly evenly out of the half, and ultimately kind of had to cling on for dear life, but no such thing as a bad road win for this team. We're able to get an early conference win, I think a win that surprised and impressed us in real time. It's kind of hard to figure out who the best non-USF team is in this league. I guess you could say Tulsa. Tulsa at this point, I think, has made a decent case for it, but it's not, it's kind of a morass up there outside of USF. Some not bad teams, but really nobody in the at-large range. And I would certainly say Tulane, along with U of H, is kind of part of that upper half of the league morass, certainly a top half of the league team, but kind of hard to pin down where they are outside of that. Coming into this one, the Wave have won three of their last four games. They have decisive wins in that stretch over Wichita State and UCF, along with a tight, high-scoring home win last Saturday over a pretty salty Tulsa team. So I expect this one, despite that high-scoring home win, to be played in the 50s and 60s. I think that's just kind of the preferred style of these two basketball teams. And I think, like that first matchup in NOLA, I think this one has the potential to be a get-right momentum kind of win, coming off an expected win over Cincy. And I think a chance for both of these teams to really feel like they deserve to be in that upper part of the conference standings. But obviously, you're going to have a better offensive effort than you've had against some of the more quality opponents in your schedule if you expect to make it a season sweep in the regular season over the Green Wave. And of course, we've got some Cougar football offseason movement to talk about, some arrivals, a couple notable departures, and we've now reached the deadline for the spring semester, so we have a kind of a clear picture of who's coming in on the transfer side of things. And we'll talk about the departures first. I think the most notable transfer, in arguably, of the Cougar football offseason came last week, just after we recorded our previous episode, in the form of linebacker Manny Nunnery, who announced last week he was leaving U of H as a grad transfer, and then Monday made it official he'd be joining the Florida Gator football program, likely for his final 2 years of college eligibility. And prior to this, I think all the players that were transferring out from Cougar football fit a very same general rough profile. They were all guys who were backups that were either going to struggle to get a starting spot or even had struggled to get on the field, period, prior to their transfer. And that just does not describe Nunnery at all. He went from being, I think, kind of a special team standout defensive rotation guy in the 2020 and 2021 seasons to a guy who started a good chunk of this past season. Over the course of the season, was by far U of H's highest graded linebacker by Pro Football Focus. And I think if you had asked us to start naming key returning defensive players for 2023, I don't think we would have gone too far down that list before we got to Nunnery. He had the most solo and total tackles of any guy who is projected to return in the Independence Bowl. So it's just never not a big deal when a guy that's that caliber of player leaves your program. That doesn't mean you don't have guys in the program now who could develop into impact players, returners like Jamal Morris, Tremarcus Cheeks, and Aaron Willis, who I think he's very intriguing. The staff clearly kept him at four games to get his redshirt year that he did not get his 1 year at Tennessee. You have an exciting incoming transfer in Ish Harris. So reasons for optimism there, but I think losing Nunnery, you're not going to be able to spin that as anything other than a net negative. And I guess the really good news is that we're almost in the January, and this is the first net negative transfer in an offseason where you're even seeing blue blood programs lose guys who even the most ardent fans would admit were net positives to the program, that are, as departures, are net negative. So not the end of the world, certainly, but I think, stating the blindingly obvious, you would much rather have Manny Nunnery in the Cougar football program than not. But obviously we wish him the best as he plays his final two collegiate seasons in Gainesville. And of course, going to stick with the topic of football departures while I'm here, though this one's on the coaching side of things. As of Monday late afternoon, I believe Football Scoop was the first one on the story reporting that Cougar co-offensive coordinator, offensive line coach, and run game coordinator Brandon Jones was being let go from his position. And if you'll recall, Jones was part of the original coaching staff hired here by Daniel Holgorsen when he arrived prior to the 2019 season. As an assistant hire, he was really one we were specifically excited about. Jones had actually briefly joined Mac Brown's new staff in North Carolina. U of H had, enough money and intrigue to pry him away from what was a P5 program at the time, where U of H was a G5, not necessarily going to the Big 12 in the next year kind of program. Pulling him from a championship-winning head coach at a P5 to us really at the time felt like a big deal. You could find a number of instances of Dustin and myself really being excited during those 2019 offseason podcasts about that hire. Jones had a good track record from previous stops as an O-line coach. At ECU, he was working there under a certain wunderkind OC named Lincoln Riley. Was at Cal, and they had a really great passing attack with Jared Goff and Sonny Dykes in 2015. Worked at Tech under Cliff Kingsbury after that. It was a hire that seemed to check all the boxes, though, in the 4 years since. You haven't really seen the UH offensive line be the most consistent. And some of that was completely out of Jones' control. His first 2 years here, it was just a revolving door of guys due to injury, and I don't think even the most skilled offensive line coach really could have overcome that in a meaningful way. And the Cougar offensive line has done some things well over the past 2 years, I think largely in the pass blocking side. Patrick Paul and Cameron Johnson both earned first-team all-conference honors this year, and the Cougars only allowed 23 sacks in 13 games, despite for a good chunk of the year being a pretty pass-heavy offense. I think by any metric, it was the offensive line for U of H's best offense since the current staff arrived. But I think it's also fair to say that for the fourth season in a row, the Cougar offense has had a substandard run game. It was pretty obvious this offseason that this coaching staff wanted to upgrade that position group, the offensive line, going into the Big 12. And I don't think it was a coincidence that a good chunk of your reserve offensive linemen went into the portal this offseason. I think to this point, other than Jalen Garth transferring in, there have been no other transfers to come in on the offensive line side of things. And that's a problem. And I think it'll be impossible to ever fully confirm why this dismissal happened. I just have a hard time believing that the lack of incoming players did not at least play some part in that. Quick premium plug for the podcast. Like I said at the top, we get more in the weeds about Brandon Jones than I have time to do tonight. And I thought I really enjoyed kind of diving in on what this means. But I think in the meantime, you're now a bit late in the coach hiring cycle, but not super late. There are still staffs out there hiring for position coach and coordinator openings. But you're now advertising a Big 12 assistant job. You have the entirety of last group stars expected to return. I think you're going to attract some good external candidates. I would imagine the fact that Holgorsen gave the most recent offensive line coach 4 years, I think the general stability that I think everyone knows Dana Holgorsen's contract provides, while being very frustrating to Cougar fans, I think it makes the position attractive if you know your boss, the guy bringing you in, is not really going to be very movable over the next few seasons. And who knows, maybe they go with the internal hire, Jawan Delaney, who's been an analyst on the staff, has worked the offensive line most of Holgorsen's time here. And you saw a similar such move to Dekeel Shorts, to receivers coach, during the 2021 offseason, which has certainly paid dividends both in the on-field product and recruiting since then. So certainly something we're going to keep an eye on. You'd imagine that U of H won't get too much further into the offseason without filling that position with a new assistant on staff. And we're going to stick with the additions here, but going to the player side of things, you also saw Cougar football bring in some more veteran guys from the portal to compete for reps on the defensive side of the ball. The first arrival came Monday morning in the form of Ole Miss defensive end Brandon Mack. Mack had spent the previous four seasons with the Ole Miss program, was actually recruited by Lane Kiffin's predecessor, Matt Luke, was not brought in under the current staff, was in the class of 2019. He redshirted that first year on campus, played in five games, actually started one during the 2020 COVID season. Unfortunately, missed all of 2021 injured, never really was able to work his way back into getting on the field too consistently for 2022. But a guy originally was a high three-star recruit from Montgomery, Alabama, I believe is going to come in as a grad transfer with 2 years of eligibility thanks to the COVID eligibility freeze and using his redshirt year in 2019, had an injury year in there as well. You can't say too much at this point about the on-field. You haven't seen a lot of it consistently at Ole Miss the past couple seasons, but I think you're also talking about a guy who wasn't recruited by the staff, who still stuck around, and the staff there still wanted him to stick around, was an academic all-conference guy, basically every year, got his degree, so I think it sounds like, if nothing else, you're getting a good quality guy in the locker room. I have an inherent trust that Brian Early has an eye for impact guys at this position. Another really intriguing guy who's going to be coming in as an edge rusher, your second edition of this week, grad transfer, David Agwebu from the Oklahoma Sooner football program, announced on Tuesday morning he would be playing his final college season with the Houston Cougars. Agwebu actually saw significant action on the field each one of the 4 years he was in the Sooner program, played in all 14 of their games. His true freshman year, 2019, was a mainstay from there, although he never really moved into being a full-time starter until this past season. But this past season, he was second on the team in tackles, 110 total tackles and 55 solo. Also contributed 2 sacks and 7.5 TFLs. Weibu was originally a 4-star recruit from Seven Lakes High, and KD had offers from just about every big name you could think of: Alabama, Michigan, and many, many others. And I think the really intriguing aspect of this is that, I alluded to it, this guy's going to be an edge rusher. Agwebu definitely was more of an inside linebacker this year. And the PFF grades, again, not infallible, told you that he struggled at times. And he's made it very clear that his move to U of H is about a move back to being an edge rusher, back to being a defensive end, the position he was actually recruited to play out of high school. And I'm excited to see how he does, focusing more on being an edge rusher. And I think you will certainly take any guy who has Agwebu's level experience against your new conference. And last but not least, actually, I think I said three at the top. I don't know if I said it exactly. You had two more additions coming on Wednesday. Wednesday morning, the Cougars got actually an addition from Daniel Holgerson's last employer, West Virginia. Tight end Michael Laughlin announced he was transferring to U of H. Laughlin was originally recruited as a 3-star, as Suburban Chicago was recruited by Holgerson's West Virginia staff. And actually, his first season in Morgantown was Dana's last season there. Under Neil Brown, Laughlin, when he was healthy, which again, big F there, was actually a mainstay, played a fair amount, played in all 12 games the Mountaineers had as a redshirt freshman in 2019, but had season-ending injuries in 2021, had a season-ending injury this year, and had actually considered, I think understandably, retiring from the sport. But despite that horrid injury luck, despite being an offense that didn't really heavily feature a tight end, he still had 37 receptions the past four seasons, was someone really highly regarded, it seems, by the Mountaineer fan base as well. I think, yeah, unsurprisingly, he would have considered walking away from the sport, but has decided to come back and try and play his last year at the University of Houston. And health is certainly a big if here, I think I've pretty well established, but with the graduation of Christian Trahan, I think, if nothing else, Laughlin is stepping into a position group where it's wide open, where there's not a proven guy in there, and certainly not a proven guy who has the amount of Big 12 experience that Laughlin has. I think at worst, it's kind of like Brandon Mack. I think you're still bringing in a quality guy and student in the program, but we're certainly not done with additions. The team made it official on Wednesday that Brian George from Texas A&M had officially enrolled at U of H, joined the football program for the spring semester. George had previously been committed, I think on Christmas Day, to UCF, and until today, Wednesday, had not officially decommitted from the Knights, though, was kind of an open secret since the beginning of the spring semester period that George would be joining the Cougar football program and not UCF. In fact, listeners of our last premium podcast got to hear a little bit about George before it became official. Sorry, last plug of the premium podcast. But certainly an exciting addition for a secondary that I think we all knew needed to bring in some new faces this offseason. Originally from South Florida, Belgrade, and started his college career playing in the always competitive Jayhawk JUCO League at Highland, was actually teammates and very good friends with recent Cougar luminary Damarian Williams, was a 2019 JUCO All-American, a 4-star JUCO recruit who had offers from Bama, Georgia, Miami, and just a number of big names before choosing to play at Texas A&M. Played in all 10 games of the 2020 season, started 2 games that year, including the Aggies' Orange Bowl win over UNC, started 6 of the 10 games he appeared in the last 2 seasons, did struggle at times to stay healthy, and also it was very clear that he did not get along with the Aggies' 2022 defensive coordinator, DJ Durkin, the same way they got along with Mike Elka, who this previous offseason got the head coaching job at Duke. If we're talking about a guy, if he could stay healthy, who's a really exciting addition. I mean, for all the faults of Jimbo Fisher's last 3 years at Texas A&M, that's an Aggie team that's had a very good defense over that period. There's a reason, like I said, that George's first defensive coordinator is now a Power 5 head coach. And we're talking about a guy who, if he could stay healthy, I think potentially that's one of your starters at corner right there. A 6'2 guy with extensive experience in the toughest conference in the country, playing the boundary cornerback position, a guy who was able to get on the field. And again, I'm not going to spend too much of the show fluffing the SEC, but he got on the field for a good SEC defense. It just was looking for a starting job and looking for a chance to, I think, show off in his final year of college. And I think certainly the cherry on top is flipping a recruit from a conference rival like UCF. And of course, even though it's just me tonight, we're not going to skip the patron question of the week. If you'd like to support the show, less than 20 cents a month, like I said at the top, patreon.com/shpawdcast. You can support us there, get the free premium, or excuse me, get access to the premium pods along with our wonderful weekly pods that we so enjoy giving you. But our patron question of the week tonight is from our good friend Sean, who asks, apparently at tonight's Coach Sampson weekly radio show, somebody asked a long-winded question that included the topic of mud puddles. What would you ask Coach Sampson if given the opportunity to ask one question? And if you got a second question, but it couldn't be related to basketball, what would you ask? I think the first one for me is pretty easy. I spent probably a tenth of the time thinking about the first part of that question as I did the second part, Sean, which I guess is a good endorsement of the question you asked if I had to spend a fair amount of time thinking about how I specifically answer. But the first part is, I'm really curious, and he's alluded to it, and he's talked about it. This is not something that's a deep state secret for Kelvin Sampson, but he talked about from kind of the untimely end of his time at Indiana to when he took over at the University of Houston as the head coach in 2014. He talked about what an impact being a professional, an NBA assistant coach had on him and his offensive philosophy and just how he went about running the program. And I think I would just ask him what he learned both from his X's and O's and a personnel management standpoint that has helped him go from being, he was a very good coach at Oklahoma. This is not me knocking Oklahoma/Indiana/Washington State Kelvin Sampson, but he'd be the first to acknowledge that his offensive philosophy just became so much more effective and fluid and fitting to the times rather than being a real tough defensive team that did just enough offensively to win games, that he's had some really good offensive teams since coming here to the University of Houston, I think can be directly traced to his time as an assistant coach with the San Antonio Spurs, Minnesota Timberwolves, and Houston Rockets. I believe that's the full set of teams they worked for. I would just be very curious, both from the on-court, his offensive philosophy, and just what he learned X's and O's wise, and also learning how to deal with professionals versus 18 to 22-year-olds and how that's affected his approach with 18 to 22-year-olds. Now, I'm sure it's not identical, but I'm sure he learned stuff beyond just the X's and O's from being in the professional game, and I would just love to have him detail for me as much as he could if I had one question to ask him how exactly he did that. And the second part of that, I don't know if this is cheating, Sean. If you find this cheating, you know how to get a hold of us, and I will very much give you my mea culpa if it is. I just want his craziest story. I know he talked about the time where they had to duct tape the doors of the bus shut, but I just want his absolute craziest story from his first season coaching at Montana Tech. I find small sports and the stories that come from them very fascinating. I find the American West, Montana, Idaho, Wyoming, Utah, my current home state of Nevada, very, very fascinating, the landscape, and just imagining Kelvin Sampson going in this old school bus for this NAIA basketball program through the various mountain passes and scenic vistas of the American West. I find that to be a very interesting potential topic, and I realize it's tangentially related to basketball, Sean, so that's why if you feel I'm cheating and you feel like you deserve a better second part answer to that, I'm more than happy to provide that for you. But if I couldn't answer something directly about basketball, maybe about his life experience and something tangential to basketball, I would ask him for his craziest first season coach at a Montana Tech story. And we got three more Cougar sports to talk about, or at least two more Cougar sports to talk about with events and one team with a notable event to come that I'm going to at least mention here. And passing, but we're going to start with Cougar track and field. We're going to start with H-Town Speed City, returning to action last Friday, their second meet of the indoor season, which was the Robert Platt Invitational. If you're not familiar, Robert was a U of H pole vaulter, was the son of former Cougar volleyball head coach Caddy Platt, tragically passed away in a boating accident in the summer of 2019. This was the first Robert Platt Invitational, and I think it's really nice the program has continued to honor his memory in this way. I know it was very, very deeply tragic for this program to lose a young man like Robert when they did. It was a really positive meet for the Cougars, though, between the men and women. The Cougs won 14 events at this meet. For the second meet in a row, you had Davion Wilson and Destiny Smith taking home the titles in the men's and women's 60-meter hurdles, respectively. You had two other event sweeps in this one as well, both the men's and women's 4x4 relays one, as well as the triple jump, where both Quentin Stringfellow and Destiny Lawrence grabbed event wins. You'd expect this, but Cougar men also dominated on the sprinting side of things, had a podium sweep in the 60-meter dash with Aaron Bell winning the event, followed closely by Edward Sumwell IV and Christian Hamberlin. Really, really impressive to see this level of sprinting ability, even with Sean Maswanyani not racing in this meet. And Bell's a guy we're going to be continuing to watch, continuing to be interested in, watching his development over the remainder of the season. Was a guy we were really excited about last season, but didn't see the track much in the previous season. I think we'll see a lot more of him and see a lot more of the Aaron Bell we heard a lot about before he got to campus. You also had Cecilia Tamayo Garza and Alexis Tilford Rutherford, two veterans who scored event wins in the 200-meter and long jump, respectively, on the women's side. You also had Aubrey Tupper, her first second collegiate meet, no problem, wins the women's pole vault, really cool stuff for Aubrey. And last but not least, the distance events on the men's side, you had Devin Vallejo Bannister win the mile, followed very closely by last week's big distance event winner, his teammate Brandon Seagreaves. So the Cougars will return to action, have their third meet in a row at the home friendly confines of the Yeoman Fieldhouse to open the season. They will be hosting the Houston Invitational for that one. I got a quick winter sports update that I alluded to a moment ago. Cougar Swimming and Diving will have their final regular season meet and their senior day at home at the Campus Rec Center Natatorium on Saturday. It's a dual meet against the Rice Owls. Will be the last time the Cougar swimmers and divers have a chance to tune up before the American Conference Swimming and Diving Championships. They'll be in the middle of next month in Dallas. And we're going to, of course, last but not least, close out with some Cougar tennis tonight. An expected, but I would say more competitive than we hoped, or not hope, excuse me, more competitive than we would have believed, as competitive as we'd hoped, really, really realistically, loss to Baylor and an expected win over the UT-RGV Vaqueros. So we're going to start with last Saturday's loss to the Baylor tennis program, a Baylor tennis program that I think is noteworthy, is receiving top 25 votes. The Cougs did ultimately lose the team score in that one 6-1, but I think simply getting a point off Baylor was probably better than we expected and better than the Cougs certainly did last time these two teams faced off in 2021. You got your lone team point coming off a straight set singles win by senior Azul Pedamonte over Daniela Dimitrov of Baylor. You also had an athlete that we singled out last week, freshman Sophie Schout, and she had a super close first set loss to one of Baylor's best single players, Paula Baraño. Schout was also paired with sophomore Alana Trincheva in doubles, and they lost a pretty competitive match to Bernriano and Dimitrov. So I would say it's a loss, but I think the hope for us when we previewed this one was that it would be slightly more competitive than that opening loss to A&M, and I think check, it was slightly more competitive than a home loss to a top five A&M team. And the Cougars would stay in Waco for a Sunday match, like I said at the top, against UTRGV. The Cougars won that one by a team score of 6-1. The Cougars' lone drop point this one came on the single side. They took two of three doubles matches for that point and picked up five single wins for an easy team match win. It was the 13th win in as many tries over UTRGV, despite actually, funny enough, being the third time these teams have faced each other away from Houston. The Cougars have not allowed more than 1 point in any of these wins, and I'm glad this year wasn't a year that broke that nice trend. So Cougar tennis actually to this point in the young season has not been back at home, but will finally return to action at the Barbara Winston Tennis Facility on Friday. They'll be hosting the Elon Phoenix on Friday, and then over the weekend we'll host Texas State and UL Monroe on Saturday and Sunday. So that's it. I really appreciate those of you who were patient with me as the solo host of this show. If I'm the one that you were the second favorite host of, I really appreciate you gutting it out, sticking in with me on this one for almost 75 minutes of podcasting. If you like what we do here, if you want to support the show, if you're curious what's going on, go to patreon.com/shpawdcast. Go to shpawdcast.com/support as well. Both places will get you to where you need to go if you are considering making a donation to the program. And it's something I haven't mentioned in a while, but I think I'll mention here before I go. If you're not really in a position to or have the desire to give us a financial contribution, but you're like, you know what, I like these guys. I want to do something to support their show. Please, 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 your podcast have a choice, whether it's Apple, Spotify, Google, Stitcher, et cetera, et cetera. Leave us a 5-star review. It really helps us get noticed. It helps us look like a legitimate podcast for Cougar fans out there who are looking to hear somebody talk all things Cougs. So that'll wrap it up for this week. If you listened 75 minutes in, if you listened through my stupid yoga intro, if you listened to all the things Cougar sports-wise that I talked about over the rest of the show, I really, really, really appreciate you. And as always, go Cougs.
Go Cougs.
Vamos los Cougs.
Go Cougs.
Go Cougs.
Go Cougs.
We ain't invited to the party. We had to kick the door in, no cap.